Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Parliament started telling the colonists who they can and can't trade with, causing all sorts of problems for the colonists. Things spiraled out of control, and the very first real protest against England occurred over the issue of taxing them without representation. After Governor Bennett left office, another guy became governor, and everything seemed okay. Then another guy became governor, and this guy was Governor Matthews. Things with him also seemed okay for a bit, until in 1658, about 1 year after he became governor, the assembly met and the elected side passed an order saying that the governor's council would no longer get the sweet perks of taxpayers paying for their housing while the assembly was in session. The very next day, Governor Matthews and his council issued an order saying, oh, a bunch of people in one county want to be joined with another county, so I'll grant it that they're joined together, and oh, by the way, the assembly's dissolved. It was the last sentence of the order, almost like an afterthought. But it was clearly not an afterthought. In it, the governor said that there were many important reasons for him doing this. The governor's council losing those perks of free swank housing on behalf of taxpayers' money was probably one of them. The elected side responded in a short letter. It was polite and brief and basically said, yeah, no, maybe governors in the past had the authority to tell us to go home. But remember, a few years ago, we decided that the assembly chooses the governor, and we also decided what powers he has? Yeah, that's not one of those powers. The assembly voted that no, they're not going home. And furthermore, any member of the elected side that left their seat would be charged with treason against the people. Governor Matthews accepted this surprisingly well. Perhaps he was just misinformed and really thought he had the power to tell the elected side of the Virginia Assembly to go home. I mean, it was normal for governors to do this. It wasn't seen as noteworthy, really, until this time, when the rules around it started to change. So, he sent an official letter to the assembly saying that he would agree to let them continue their business so long as they promised to be quick about it, and they'll go ahead and ask the Lord Protector in England, who was Oliver Cromwell, to decide what to do about it and whether or not the governor did indeed have the power to tell them to go home. The elected side, unsurprisingly, said, yeah, we'd like to get on with our business and hurry as fast as we can as well, but we want you to declare that we're not dissolved. It may seem like a small issue to argue over. I mean, didn't the governor say, go ahead, you're not dissolved, and just finish your business? Yes, but the assembly wasn't asking for permission to get on with their business. They were asking the governor to take back the order for them to go home because he didn't have that power in the first place. It would be like if a judge randomly came up to you and said that he gives you permission to finish your work for the day. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to, but you need to take your order out of here because you don't have the authority to tell me whether or not I can finish my work day. The assembly was clearly resisting attempts at controlling them. They were making it clear that the people who elected them had power, had a voice, and couldn't be stomped on as easily as they had in the past. The governor responded to this by saying, okay, fine, I'm withdrawing my order for you to finish your work day, but again, we'll put the matter to the Lord Protector in England and see whether he says I have this power to tell you to finish your work day. It was a tense situation, and the very idea of the power of the people rested in whether or not the representatives of the people could be dismissed on the wishes of the governor. Again, this is exactly the power that the governor and kings in England had for hundreds of years. This was how it worked. The Civil War in England had just ended and was, in part, over this very issue, whether the king could dismiss the people's representatives in Parliament. And now, here in the American colony of Virginia, the same issue was being fought over. Granted, there wasn't a civil war against the governor in Virginia, but things were changing. All of this wasn't enough for the elected side of the assembly. Not only was it necessary for the governor to withdraw his order for them to finish their work day, they decided to put together a group of people whose job it was to write a report basically confirming the assembly's power. The report would put forth all of the reasons that the assembly had power to call itself and dismiss itself, and how the governor didn't have this power. The group studied the colony's constitution, history, and laws. They wrote a strong report detailing all of the reasons that the power of the government resided with the people and the representatives they elected. Interestingly, though, they included a line that said that they had this power until the supreme power in England could tell them otherwise. So we can see that even though this spirit of democracy was forming, the most fierce defenders of democracy still recognized the ultimate power of England. To them, the ruler of England was still more powerful than the people in Virginia. The report continued on, saying that Governor Matthews could remain in office, but the governor's council would be dismissed and a new one would be elected by the elected side of the assembly. They seemed to blame the governor's council more than the governor himself. The report stated that the governor's council was a bunch of power-hungry politicians trying to destroy the power that belonged to the people. In order to prevent representatives from being ordered around or arrested for gathering or any other threats against them, the report also stated that until further notice, police were not to carry out any warrants or commands given by any person other than the Speaker of the House. The House, again, was the elected side of the assembly. The report ended by declaring again that the power to dissolve the assembly rested only with the assembly. Furthermore, any future members of the governor's council would be elected by the elected side of the assembly. And again, they inserted a line here stating that this was to be the law unless the supreme power in England declares something else to be the law. We'll see that for a long time, the colonies kept England as the absolute power in their minds. It took a lot of issues and a long time trying to beg England to do or not do things before America declared its independence. It was only after nearly 200 years of pleading with England desperately and at length that we decided there was no other choice than to break off. The governor remained in office, and the elected side of the assembly elected new members for the governor's council. But all was not well. For the next year, the assembly's power was once again threatened. Parliament had sent a letter to the assembly telling them that the Lord Protector, who was Oliver Cromwell, had made plans to put order back in the colony and to settle the matter of whether or not the governor had the power to dismiss the assembly. The letter went on to inform them that the Lord Protector, Oliver Cromwell, had died, and that his son, the new Lord Protector, would resume the plans to settle the matter. Part of the letter said that the governor and his council should restore order. That part worried the assembly because it implied that the answer to the question would be that the governor did indeed have the power to dismiss the assembly. The assembly met to discuss this, and as can be expected, they declared that they would obey whatever the Lord Protector commanded of them. They would, however, ask the Lord Protector to order that only the assembly had that power. Whether or not the Lord Protector would grant this request didn't end up mattering much, because within 2 years he had stepped down from the position and the executed king's son, Charles II, was placed on the throne. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the return of Governor Berkeley, the return of the king to England, and the consequences of a newer, meaner version of the Navigation Acts that this time was strictly enforced. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.